Portions of today's programming on WUSB were made possible by the Cinema Arts Center, 423 Park Avenue in Huntington. The Cinema Arts Center features independent, foreign, cult, and selected mainstream films. For information, their telephone number is 631-423-FILM. That's 631-423-3456.
And it's coming up on 1800 Hours here at Stony Brook, which translates in American to 6 p.m. It's Tuesday evening, time for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour or so. And yes, it's begun. The panic, the mayhem, the chaos. Oh, I just love it. Yes, we're getting snow tonight, and it's supposed to pile up all the way up to maybe 5 inches. Or they're saying maybe a foot, maybe more, maybe none. Nobody knows what's going on, and that's the beauty of it. Because in the end, do we really know how much snow is going to fall in the bigger scheme of things? So there's chaos and pandemonium. They're thinking of having a snow day tomorrow in New York City, which is pretty rare. It doesn't happen all that often. And it's also a real pain in the ass to the parents who have to work, and all of a sudden Junior is home and you don't know what to do. It causes all kinds of unpredictability. And it's almost certain that there'll be snow days tomorrow as well. I understand the local school district has canceled all its after-school activities. Oh, it's 6 o'clock in the evening, so I don't think there would be very many at this point anyway. Actually, it's kind of stupid because it's not even snowing yet, and they canceled the after-school activities. I don't know. You got to react, though. You got to do something. No word on Stony Brook, at least no word that I'm aware of, as far as if classes will be canceled. On the second day of classes, they just began again today. What are you going to do? Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to launch into our first feature, which is the Tommy Chong tribute. Our weekly Tommy Chong tribute takes place because Tommy Chong, half of Cheech and Chong, is still in prison because he dared to sell bongs on the Internet. Something which I still don't understand how he can get in prison for. But there you go. He's sitting in jail right now because of that. You may be next. Yeah, you might not be selling bongs on the Internet, but you might be talking about bongs on the radio. And, well, gee, that could be illegal next, right? You just never know. And we're going to be talking about some other news items. Tonight, of course, is the New Hampshire primary. Big deal. We'll be opening up the phone lines for people that might have some insight. Maybe someone can still explain to me what happened last week, what the importance of the Iowa caucuses is, because I don't know. It makes no sense to me, no matter how many times I think about it, and I've been thinking about it almost nonstop. It just makes no sense, and I'll get into that a little bit more as well. But the main topic of tonight, of course, will have nothing to do with politics, or bongs, or snow, but rather another planet. That's right, the amazing things that have happened on Mars in the last few weeks. Something that the media doesn't seem to care about. I mean, yeah, they're covering it, but they're barely covering it. In fact, I don't think they're covering it at all anymore. But we'll talk more about that, and we'll take some phone calls, 631-632-WUSB. Here's Tommy Chong and Cheech Marin.
Hey, man, which one of you guys is the DJ?
That's me, Wink Dickerson from KRUT Radio.
Oh, far out, thing. Hey,
no, that's
man.
Wink. Wink Dickerson from KRUT Radio.
Far out. Listen, man, do you want to give me your name, man? I'm supposed to introduce you after the next act, okay?
Yeah, well, like I said, it's Wink Dickerson from KRUT Radio.
Yeah, Dink.
Perhaps you've caught my show, Wink's Wax to Watch, on Saturday from 12 to 1.
No, man, I'm really not into AM.
Oh, I see. Well, remember, it's 11,111 on your radio dial.
Oh, yeah, man, I'll write that down. I think my sister listens to you once.
Oh, far out.
So listen, man, are you ready to go on?
Oh, right on.
Oh, far out, man. Okay, man, I'm going to go out and announce you now. You ready?
Sure, I'm ready anytime you are. Don't forget, it's Wink Dickerson from KRUT.
All right, testing. Hey, is this thing on? Testing. Is this thing on? Can you hear me back there? Yeah, well, then shut up, all right? Hey, listen, I'm supposed to introduce the guy that's going to bring on the next act. Can you hear me out there? Yeah, well, then shut up. Hey, now listen. Can we have a round of applause? Hey, get off the stage. Hey, do you want to get off the stage? You guys want to shut up? Listen, we want a round of applause for our DJ who's going to introduce the next act. Okay, can we hear it for Dink Winkerson from KRUT Radio?
Hi there, groovy guys, groovy girls, peace, love, dope. Beads, bells, incense, light shows, crash pass, and Hare Krishna, all you groovy freaks. Dig it right on and power to the people. Great kids, having a good time tonight? Far out and solid. Listen, before we bring out this next act, I just want to say that you kids are really great tonight, and let's have a good time and keep it clean, huh, kids? All right, here comes the next act. He's the fastest rising blues singer on the circuit today. He is the man responsible for that upcoming hit, Going Downtown, Gonna See My Gal. Let's give a big, warm welcome for Blind Melon Shetland!
Okay, that's it for this week, and that's the second appearance, actually, of Blind Melon Shetland. He appeared last week, too. In fact, it's the same record. It's the Cheech and Chong self-titled album of 1978. That was called Wink Dinkerson. Yeah, and you know, it's like a fine wine, where you leave the top off for a year, and something happens to it. Okay, so that's it for Tommy Chong this week. Remember, that's not why he was put in prison. He was put in prison for the bongs. That's not right. All right. So, as far as what's going on this week, we have all kinds of things. Oh, look at this. It's a feature that has snuck up on me. Am I ready for this? Okay, hold on. It's been so long since we've done this, I have to get back into character. Okay, I'm ready. Cue the telephone, please. All right. Yes, it's another edition of Corporate Intelligence, where we reach out and ask representatives of particular corporations just how much they know about the company they work for. And so far, we've been notoriously unsuccessful as far as finding people who don't know something about the company they work for. We found people at work at Kmart who know what the K stands for. We found people at CVS. They understood what CVS stood for. And we've had lots of suggestions. People write into OTW at 2600.com, and they suggest things, some of them nice things, some of them not so nice things, for us to do as far as asking people something about their company. This is the one I think that we got the most suggestions for, so we might as well just get it over with right now. All right. And, of course, we always reach out to a different part of the country as well. So let's do that first. Dial the 9 there. Okay, we have our dial tone. Dial tone coming out over the airwaves. I think I hear it. Okay, good. And we're going to dial this number here. I believe we're going to Kansas. Is that where we're going? Okay, we're going to Kansas. I don't know what the weather is like over there. And here we go. Okay, this is just further proof that we don't stage these things, and these things are not done on tape. They're done live. Well, you know, that place in Kansas has missed its opportunity. We're going to try another place. Yeah, we're prepared. We printed out more than one phone number, fortunately. You learn from experience. Hello?
Yep.
Is this 7-Eleven?
Uh-huh.
Hi, I just moved here from Guam, and I'm hoping you could help me because I'm seeing 7-Eleven everywhere. Is that the address? Is that the price? What is 7-Eleven?
Price?
It's the price?
I'm sorry, I didn't get you. What do you
mean? Well, I'm trying to find out, what does 7-Eleven mean?
7-Eleven mean?
Yeah.
It's a convenience store and a gas station.
But what is the 7-Eleven part? Is that the address? Or does everything cost $7.11?
No. It's born on 07-11. I don't know which year, but...
Oh, it started on July 11th.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Ah, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.
Man, I think we have an answer to the question of what started 7-Eleven. It was born on July 11th. Well, for me, July 11th actually is a very significant date, but not for that reason. Well, I'll get into that some other time. wrong! That is not what 7-Eleven is for. I think a lot of people know that. Nice try, though. What did he pull that one out of? Shall we give Kansas another chance here? All right, let's go to the big city. Let's go to Kansas City. Yeah. If anybody will know, it's Kansas City. Kansas City folk. This is Kansas City, Kansas, though, not Kansas City, Missouri, so it's not really the big city. It's the city next to the big city.
May I help you?
Hi, 7-Eleven. I just moved here from Guam, and I'm seeing all these signs for 7-Eleven. I was hoping you could tell me what the sign means. Is that the address? Is that the price for everything in the store? What does 7-Eleven mean?
7-Eleven is, it is open 24 hours.
It's a what?
It is... open 365 days, 24 hours a day.
So shouldn't it be called 24 then?
I know, but it used to be 7-Eleven. They used to open until 11 o'clock. Then they didn't change. That sounds better than 7-24. You know, that's why they kept it.
So they used to open at 11 o'clock and close at 7?
You know, it used to open 7 o'clock and close 11 o'clock. But now they open 24 hours a day.
Oh, I get it. Okay, that makes sense. So, yeah, because 11 o'clock is too early to close, I think.
Yeah.
All right, 7 o'clock is too late
to close
open.
By here?
I'm sorry. Well, actually, I'm getting closer. I'm just driving around, and I'll... you're in Kansas City, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you're open all around the clock?
Yes.
Okay, I'll stop by then.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that is the right answer, yes. It used to be open from 7 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night. Hence the name 7-Eleven. I know there's people listening in foreign countries that have never seen a 7-Eleven. The funny thing is, most people, most 7-Elevens that have opened, have been 24 hours since the day they opened, yet they take on the name. It just goes to show you that things aren't always factually correct. just because the store is called 7-Eleven does not necessarily guarantee that it's open from 7-Eleven. In fact, in this particular case, it guarantees that it will not be open from 7-Eleven because they are all 24 hours as far as I know. Maybe there's a 7-Eleven somewhere that does keep to those hours. I know around here, Dunkin' Donuts stay open 24 hours, but in other places, they close. Yeah, it's true. And then I knew the 7-Eleven in London, a very tiny one, about the size of this room that I'm in right now. And they closed, and they didn't open again. Yeah, they're gone. So sometimes they go out of business, too. Okay, that's our corporate intelligence episode for this week. If you have suggestions or ideas for corporate intelligence segments, please send them to us, otw@2600.com. All right, then. Thanks to the people of Kansas. Well, what's going on in the world? All kinds of things, actually. And we're going to try and rip through that pretty quickly. Let's talk about the caucuses for a second, all right? Because that's something that just has been upsetting me, no end. I talked last week a little bit about this, about how Gephardt was dropping out of the whole race because of how he did in the Iowa caucus. I couldn't understand why. Why is that? You know, because you lose to a bunch of people in one state. And not only, you know, people in the whole state, just a certain segment. The people who want to go out and spend a few hours debating with their neighbors and making their vote public. You know, you don't come in first place, or in his case, even fourth place. Okay, you get a little discouraged, but why quit? Why quit the whole campaign because of that? And then we also had the kind of surprising turn of events where John Kerry came in first place instead of Howard Dean. Everyone was expecting Howard Dean to come in first, and all of a sudden Kerry came out of nowhere. Well, actually, I think he was in second place, and he had a strong finish, beating Dean 2-1, leading to Dean's tirade. Okay, so now, based on the results in Iowa, and I've been seeing this all week, people in New Hampshire have changed their votes. You could say it's because of Dean's tirade. I don't think that's the reason. People see what happened in Iowa. They see that one person won by a substantial margin, and they want to go with the winner. Yeah, you know, and that's fine. That's all fine and good. But you're basing this on such a small percentage of the population, a rather homogenous percentage of the population, and because of this small amount of people in one state, another state is suddenly changing the way that they feel. So Howard Dean has dropped out of first place. John Kerry has now replaced him as the front runner. And it can all be traced back to the caucus. So, you know, it seems to me that if you really want to influence politics in this country, move to Iowa. And sort of muscle your way in, make sure people adhere to your point of view. And there's many ways to get people to do that, which is kind of why we have a secret ballot in the first place. But because of that, you will be able to actually influence how people think. It seems kind of crazy, but everything is pointing to that. If there hadn't been an Iowa caucus, Howard Dean would have won in New Hampshire tonight. In fact, he still might win. But it looks increasingly like John Kerry is going to win. And he most likely would not have had he not won in Iowa. So by the time it gets to New York, by the time we're asked our opinion, if we're even part of the right party, it's already been decided. And that's just not fair. And in my case, since I'm an independent, not independent party, independent person, I don't get to decide until November when it's down to two front runners. In New Hampshire, though, it's kind of interesting because independents can vote in the Democratic primary. And I think that's a really good thing. I'd like to know how many states share that particular rule. It would be nice if everybody did. So anyway, if anyone wants to explain it to me, we got really no explanations last week or through the mail. So I have a feeling everyone's baffled. I heard a lot of people agreeing, you know, this doesn't make any sense. But nobody really seems to know why it's this way. And why is Iowa always first? Can we be first next time? Can we just contact our New York representatives, whoever they may be, and say, look, let's make New York December. All right, December 2007. We'll have our primary, a caucus, or whatever you want to call it. We'll have it first. Because New York is, you know, it's a big apple. Well, the city is a big apple. The state is the apple orchard, and where all the apples grow, or something like that. I don't know. We'll figure something out by 2007. But the point is, let's have ours first. Iowa's had their turn. Okay, so let's stick with politics for a moment. Again, our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. Maybe we can take some phone calls a little after the half-hour point, as we did last week. And, of course, we like to hear from new listeners or new callers. People who have not called the show before. This is a live program. It comes your way from 6 to 7 Eastern Time on Tuesday nights. The archives of the Bill Clinton Presidential Library will contain 39,999,998 emails by the former president's staff and two by the man himself. It's a pretty round number, though, when you add it all together. The only two he sent, according to Skip Rutherford, president of the Clinton Presidential Foundation, which is raising money for the library, said Monday. Oh, that's all he said, actually. That was the sentence. Very poor sentence. The only two he sent. That's the whole sentence. All right. I thought he was going to say more. One of them may not actually qualify for electronic communication because it was a test to see if the commander-in-chief knew how to push the button on an email. Uh-huh. Former Ohio Senator John Glenn has the distinction of being the first American to orbit the Earth and the only person to receive an email written by Clinton when he was in office. The email was sent with the help of Clinton staffers to the space shuttle while it was in orbit, and Glenn was a part of the crew. It praised Glenn for his return to space after almost 40 years. I'd like to know the email address for the space shuttle. You know, did they get their own top-level domain? Just kind of interesting to know. And what are we going to do about Mars, you know? If we start sending email to Mars, kind of throws the whole TCIP, it just throws it all out the window because all of a sudden you have another entity and you have to have a .com over there and a .gov over there. It's, you know, it's not fair otherwise because Mars isn't a part of Earth. Anyway, I guess that's a future problem. Rutherford said Clinton, who relished the chance to speak to voters, did not make time to send emails, even though internet usage exploded during his presidency. He's not a technoklutz. I don't think President George W. Bush sends emails either. Most of the decisions in the Oval Office are made through decision memos. The 40 million emails of the Clinton administration are almost exclusively comprised of memos, notes, and correspondence among his aides and cabinet members. Then, as now, Rutherford added, Clinton was more apt to write personal notes or telephone than communicate through email. So if you're expecting to hear from Bill Clinton, don't check your inbox. Wait by the phone. It's much more likely to happen there. Now, this is interesting. You may have heard this story a few dozen times. This comes from the Boston Globe. Republican staff members of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee infiltrated opposition computer files for a year, monitoring secret strategy memos and periodically passing on copies to the media. That's according to Senate officials. From the spring of 2002 until at least 2003, April 2003, in fact, members of the GOP committee staff exploited a computer glitch that allowed them to access restricted Democratic communications without a password. Trolling through hundreds of memos, they were able to read talking points and accounts of private meetings discussing which judicial nominees Democrats would fight and with what tactics. Now, the guy who keeps this radio show online, Juntz, writes in to say, regarding that story, it's funny how when a teenager defaces a website, it's hacking. But when the Republicans steal files from the Democrats' network, they stumbled across a computer glitch that allowed them to access the files. Interesting. Indeed. You just got to be careful who you represent when you do things like this. Now, a student vandal, on the other hand, was caught after posting false weather reports. Yeah. 5 hours after this year's biggest snowstorm had stopped, Iowa University was put under an emergency alert thanks to a student hacker who manipulated the campus warning website. Yeah, the campus warning website. I'm sorry, not Iowa University, Indiana University. They said IU, so I just, Iowa's in my brain, you know. Yeah, Indiana University. IU spokeswoman Jane Jankowski said the server of the emergency website did not have adequate security and that it had been breached from the outside by a student on the IU campus. Well, that would sort of make them on the inside, but never mind. Students visiting the website, which you can go to at emergency.iub.edu, between 1:30 and 8 a.m., were greeted with the incorrect emergency alert and a plea to, quote, call up your congressman and suggest the educational process at Indiana University be suspended on Monday, unquote. Well, gee, do you think maybe some people might have caught on by then that this was a prank? Call your congressman. Okay, the site also directed students to the National Weather Service and the Drudge Report websites for details. Jankowski said the incorrect information was fixed just after 8 a.m. Monday when University Information Technology Services staff showed up for work. They installed passwords on the machine. She said since then the hole in security has been fixed. The site is no longer vulnerable to such unauthorized access. She said the student hacker had been caught. Yeah, they're hackers now. And referred to the dean of students for reprimand. Forcibly gaining unauthorized access to a website is not only against IU policy, but also against Indiana state law. You see links to the Drudge Report. You see people saying, call the congressman to say, cancel school. It's really, it's amazing to me it goes this far. But here we go. The university uses the website, which is maintained by the Office of Risk Management, to alert IU students, faculty, and staff to terrorist threats, weather-related closings. As if they're the same thing, terrorist threats and weather-related closings. Good God. And, you know, this university does the same thing. They kind of mix the country color code. Oh, by the way, we're at orange today, and we're expecting it to be partly cloudy. Give me a break. This whole thing is a joke. We can tell you it's going to snow tonight, all right? We can't tell you if someone's going to fly a plane into a building, but we can certainly tell you it's going to snow tonight. And no matter what, no matter how many federal funds, no matter how many social programs we stop, no matter how many wars we start, we're probably never going to be able to tell you that. We're never going to be able to tell you what maniac is going to do what when. Because the whole thing in the School of Maniacs is unpredictability. And no security is ever going to stop that. So we just might as well get on with our lives and stop obsessing. All right. But it will snow tonight, and if you want to freak out about that, feel free. Be my guest. Speaking of email, speaking of terrorism, speaking of stupidity, email users are being warned about a new identity theft scam that tries to snare victims by accusing them, this is good, of violating the government's Anti-Terrorism Patriot Act. I got this one maybe a dozen times already. And you know what? I knew right away that it was fake. It's good though. I'll say that it's pretty good because they give the Department of Homeland Security URL, whatever that might be, DHS.gov, and it's actually attached to an IP, which is the number that every domain name translates to. So basically what they did was they named part of their website DHS.gov, but the real name of the website they represented only in numbers. So if you weren't careful, you might have thought that you were actually connecting to that site. And since they also named the file DHS.gov, the last thing you saw in the URL was that. So it looked like, to the uninformed, it would look like, or even to the somewhat informed, that you were connecting to a .gov site, when in actuality you were connecting to a fake site. And if you looked at the IP, you could figure out who that was. You know, it's education. You just have to learn these things. It's important. Anyway, so the fraudulent message appears to be from the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC. And it asks people to verify their identity by clicking on a bogus web link. In cooperation, this is what it says, in cooperation with the Department of Homeland Security, federal, state, and local governments, your account has been denied insurance from the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation due to suspected violations of the Patriot Act. It then goes on to claim that the person's deposit insurance will be suspended until certain private information, such as a bank account number, is submitted. Hundreds of complaints have been registered throughout the United States since Friday, for some reason. I've been getting them for much longer than that. But there's no way of knowing exactly how many consumers have fallen victim. The FDIC and the FBI are investigating the source of the fraudulent emails and seeking to disrupt them. That's the best they can do? Seek to disrupt them? Sounds like cyber warfare to me. An FDIC official said on Monday the federal agencies seem to have effectively shut down the scam over the weekend, but the originators of the email have changed their tactics. The agency said there are now a few versions of the fraudulent email circulating, each steering users to different websites. Unfortunately, they're still at it, the FDIC representative said, but it appears that most consumers are calling to ask about it before doing anything. How would they know that? How would they know how many people are calling before doing anything? If someone does something, they're not going to hear about it until maybe months down the road when their life savings have been drained. No one should access the web link provided within the body of the email in case it spawns a computer virus, the FDIC official added. Yeah, but you know, if you have your computer set up properly, connecting to a URL is not going to spawn a computer virus. It will ask you before it opens certain files, and you should not be afraid to go to a particular URL. Even though they'd love for you to be afraid to visit certain sites, ours being one of them. She said, although the fake websites looked like the FDIC page, there was no computer intrusion at the FDIC offices that they're willing to admit to anyway. The emails initially appeared to come from Pakistan, but now they seem to be coming from computers in Taiwan and China. Who says they can't work together? However, the stolen data appears to be funneled through an internet address in Russia. It's not unusual for internet scam artists to hijack innocent computers in various parts of the world to cover their online tracks. It's also not unusual for people who are guilty to claim that. So we can look forward to nobody really knowing what's going on. And get this, they've come up with a new word. Spoofing a particular agency or company in an email message is known as phishing, with a PH, like the band, phishing, or carding. Yes, that's right. Carding is now no longer credit card fraud. It's spoofing a particular agency or company in an email message. I like how they just claim this as a fact, you know. Nobody has talked about this at all. This is just a fact. Anyway, that's what's going on there. You know, something else that there's been no debate about that kind of peeves me a little bit. Every aspect of Ground Zero has been discussed, you know, the memorial site, the train station design, what kind of buildings will be built there, which architect's design is best, whether there should be trees, whether there should be streets, how many floors, etc. But the one thing no one has talked about, which is now gospel and fact, is the name Freedom Tower for the building. You know, it's not the World Trade Center, or at least that building is not being called the World Trade Center. It's being called Freedom Tower. Now, you might think that's a good name. I think it's kind of hokey, to be honest. But I can live with it. The important thing, though, is that there was no discussion about it. One day, it was just, this is going to be Freedom Tower. Well, when was that decided? You know, the focal point of Lower Manhattan in the next 5 years or so is going to be Freedom Tower. You know, it feels like Washington, D.C. or something. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But it's, I don't know, it's just, it feels kind of weird. And especially just having it handed on down to us. All right, an important news, pretty important news anyway. A federal judge has declared unconstitutional a portion of the USA Patriot Act that bars giving expert advice or assistance to groups designated international terrorist organizations. This ruling marks the first court decision to declare a part of the post-September 11, 2001 anti-terrorism statute unconstitutional. So they refer to the ban on providing expert advice or assistance as impermissibly vague in violation of the First and Fifth Amendments. So that's some good news there. The other good news is that the Patriot Act is going to be expiring this year. I think this should be the number one issue in any presidential debate as to whether a candidate would support having this thing extended or having it meet its well-deserved demise. Okay. Oh, this news report, too. I don't want to skip over this. This is important. Hackers unleashed an agile worm on Monday. Yes, I was there for the opening ceremony. We gathered at this, big intersection. We opened up a box, and the computer virus was out, or worm, actually, technically, was sent out into the ether. It was an emotional event. It's always kind of sad, because you nurture the computer worms, and then you let them go. And they don't look back. They just keep going. They dive into cyberspace, just like in the movies. And you can see them spreading through the network, under the streets, through the telephone poles, into everyone's computers. And you wipe away a tear because, you've given birth to... Oh, okay, enough of this. It's not how it works. Hackers unleashed an agile worm on Monday. Oh, it's just... It's nonsense. Somebody wrote a worm. It's spreading. Probably some bored kid in the Philippines. Who knows? Anyway, according to this story, they used a sneaky, fairly new tactic to get unsuspecting computer users to defuse their malicious code. It's dubbed W32/MyDoom, or Novarg, N-O-V-A-R-G. The worm has circulated so fast that antivirus firms quickly raised threat warnings to high. That's right, they have their own level of threat warnings, saying the bug was one of the worst in recent months. And they're going to make a lot of money writing fixes for this, I'll bet. The worm is contained in emails with random senders' addresses and subject lines. While the body of the email varies, it usually includes what appears to be an error message, such as this message cannot be represented in 7-bit ASCII encoding and has been sent as a binary attachment. Yes, I've seen it. I've deleted it. Big deal. If you have a spam assassin or something like that, you can get to the point where you don't even see it. Of course, if you have certain programs... Certain Microsoft programs, I won't really get into more than that, that open attachments. Well, you know what's going to happen. That's what happened to the rover on Mars. They're not admitting it. The rover on Mars received an email. It opened the attachment. It's true. Oh my goodness. You look a lot like somebody I once knew. Mike Juhas, what are you doing here? Hang on, we only have one microphone.
So I heard.
Yeah, because this microphone's broken, so you're going to have to come right up.
Yeah.
You heard about July 11th? I called. It's amazing. Yeah, July 11th. Okay, we used to do a show back in the early 80s.
Back in the day.
Called The Voice of Long Island. Oh, man. What memories that brings back.
Yes.
And
you still have the same sideburns. That's a good thing.
I grew these sideburns for winter. It keeps me a little bit warmer in that part of my face.
Got it.
I was calling, on July 11th. This microphone makes a nice squeaking noise. So one thing in the studio you don't want to squeak. Yeah. And if you play with the spring just right. Okay, so July 11th, 1982, was it? 81? It was 81, I think.
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a very strange noise was made over the air.
Mm-hmm.
We were a bit tipsy. I don't know why we were tipsy. I think we had...
It was the pizza.
It was the pizza. They put something in it, and we were just... We were playing the Tom Waits album, remember?
Yeah.
And we started talking really mellow.
You're listening to the beautiful sounds of WUSB.
In Stony Brook. And, when you start talking like this, it's very hard to stop.
Oh, yes, it sure is.
All of a sudden, things start seeming funny that were never funny before.
That would never be funny, ever. But it was for us.
And all of a sudden, one of us, I forget who, made a very strange type of gurgling sound.
I know for a fact it wasn't me. It was you.
It became known, for lack of a better name, as the July 11th belch.
Mm-hmm. It did, yeah.
It sure did, and it spread throughout the whole station and the whole university community, in fact.
Right. Oh, yes. It was very, very infamous.
There were memos circulated about this, about what not to do over the radio and what not to listen to if you had a radio.
And if you did have a radio, not to listen to it anymore.
That's right. And to destroy all tapes. Well, we didn't destroy the tapes. We have them somewhere, and eventually they're going to wind up on the internet.
Oh, I guess they already do.
But regardless, you may wonder why I'm talking about July 11th, because we were calling, as part of our corporate intelligence...
Oscars.
Not Oscars All Night Kosher Deli. That was another bit in another show. This bit, though, is corporate intelligence, where we call certain corporations, and we ask them, like we call Kmart and ask what the K stands for, or we call CBS, ask what that stands for. We called 7-Eleven and asked them what that meant. Mm. And this person said that 7-Eleven was started on July 11th.
That's not what I ever heard.
That's not what I ever heard
Go
either.
Go figure.
We called another one in Kansas City. They had the answer. They knew what it was.
Because it was open from 7 in the morning until 11 at night.
If we know that, they should know that.
Well, of course.
So that's why. Mike, what are you doing here?
I'm just home visiting mom for a little
bit. You live in Wisconsin?
I do, yes.
Wow. I almost called Wisconsin. I called Kansas instead, but I almost called
you
Wisconsin.
Well, we don't have 7-Elevens.
Well, then I would have been.
You would have been.
Plumb out of luck.
Nastily out of luck.
Yeah. Wow, that's something. Well, I think you maybe came by for the New Hampshire primary or something.
Yeah, I'd come to New York for the New Hampshire primary.
Well, you know, you always were a little directionally challenged there.
Well, you perhaps.
So,
you know, some things never change.
Are you doing radio out there in Wisconsin?
No, not at all.
So, last I heard, you were part of a community radio station that was being taken over by some nasty
entity. By the Catholics.
The Catholics took over your station?
Yeah. Not that that's necessarily a nasty entity. He said that without really knowing the whole... The whole story.
I don't know the whole story, but it sounds like, you know, the Second Crusade or something.
I can actually sit here, can't I?
You can sit on the table.
There's no turntable there.
Well, the turntables are now under here.
I can sit here!
You can sit on what used to be the turntables. I'm going to move the squeaky microphone
down
and make that noise again.
Yes, actually, I'm out here with my wife, Janet, and my daughter, Cassidy.
Well, great.
They're sitting in the parking lot right now.
In the cold, in the snow.
No. They've got the engine running.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah. This weather. This is Wisconsin weather we're getting this
year. You get more Wisconsin weather than we do in Wisconsin.
And you know I love winter, and this is the best winter yet.
You know that last winter, I didn't use my snowblower once. Never.
I don't have a snowblower, and I've never used it either.
Perhaps you need one.
You know what I used for the first time this year, though?
A shovel.
Salt.
Ah.
Very funny, Mike. I have used shovels before, but I spread salt on my driver because I'm in the kind of driveway where you really get stuck, and you could be stuck for a month. All right, and the roads leading to my driveway weren't even plowed for a few days. It was sheer ice.
Black ice.
Going down roads sideways in my car. It was great.
Taking out some trees.
I loved it. It was, and it's going to happen all over again.
Happy day.
It's what I've always wanted. Winter should be the time of year where you can't do much.
So what are we looking for, 10 inches here overnight?
I think they're saying between 5 and 12, depending on where you are. People listening to us from all over the world, so I know the weather doesn't always interest them, but our reaction to it probably is something that,
sliding down the driveway, careering into trees.
Yeah, that's something we can all appreciate.
Okay, get back to your news.
Well, I want to read this. I think you might appreciate this story. This is about a lottery winner in West Virginia.
Oh, wasn't
you heard about
that
this guy,
sad?
Jack Whitaker. Not the guy who died.
Oh, okay.
That's another guy. No, this guy, he keeps getting robbed. Someone stole a bank bag containing $100,000 from Jack Whitaker. Doesn't he have a nice face? Look at that.
Would you want to rob a guy like that? Lovely photo of Jack. Nice.
Must be, what, about 70 years old there?
I'd say he's, judging by the shape of the glasses, got to be at least that, yeah.
Yeah, no teeth at all. Nice, friendly guy.
Well, no,
probably
he has no uppers.
Hangs out in the...
He's got his lower teeth there.
Barbershop all day long, even though he's
probably talking... Probably talking like this a little bit.
Three sounds like somebody I know. Three pairs on his head, and I guess walks over to the deli now and then on Main Street there. Anyway, he was the winner of the richest undivided lottery jackpot in United States history. Apparently, he walks around with bags of money now, so he's become a target. The thief shattered a window to get into Mr. Whitaker's locked sport utility vehicle. At least he's locking it. It was parked outside his house.
But, next time he shouldn't lock it. That way he wouldn't get his window busted.
That's true. That's true. Although, he could always bust the window just.
Just for sport.
Yeah. Anyway, he parked it outside his house in Scott Depot, which is a funny name, and now everybody knows where he lives. That's Scott Depot in...
West Virginia.
West Virginia, yes, I'm sorry. He was, he's only 56.
See what that money, 56. Look how that money ages you.
I guess it does, money is nothing but a bunch of worries. Anyway, he's a contractor. He won a Powerball jackpot in December 2002 and collected his winnings in a $113 million lump sum. So I guess losing $100,000 in a bag doesn't really matter as much as it would to most
you
of
or,
us.
You or me, yeah.
Yeah. This was the second time in less than a year that money was stolen from Mr. Whitaker. In August, a strip club manager and his girlfriend were charged with drugging him and stealing a briefcase containing more than $500,000 in cash and cashier's checks. And the money was recovered. And probably some of the same money was stolen the second time.
Hmm.
You notice how, though, he learns he does not carry a briefcase anymore. He put his money in a bag.
And he only had $100,000 instead of $500,000 with him.
Well, who knows what he did with the other $400,000? You know?
He probably spent it at that strip club.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't go into how he met those guys in the first place.
Right.
Mike, even following Mars, because Mars, I think, is something that...
Is it the land of opportunity?
Well, it might be. It might be. But I was watching TV the other night. What was it, Saturday night, Sunday night? In the middle of the night, they broke in with coverage. I think only CNN did this. Nobody else covered it. Nobody else thought it was interesting. But the Mars rover, the second one called Opportunity, had landed. And within a couple of hours, it was actually transmitting pictures. And just seeing those guys down there in the middle of the night, grouped around, watching with excitement, I realize that's what it's all about. That's exploration. That's, you know, the drive to move forward and see something different and learn.
Yeah, that's the frontier.
The final frontier. Right, actually, I don't think it's the final frontier.
Well,
it's
one of the perhaps it's the penultimate frontier.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is something we should be doing a lot more, you know, than we've been doing in the past.
Sure.
Now, I uncovered this story. Look at the story here.
This is from the New York Times.
The New York Times on August 27th, 1911. The headline reads, Martians build two immense canals in 2 years.
In the New York Times.
In the New York Times. Martians build two immense canals in 2 years. I went down to the library and I found this paper and I printed it out.
So you could actually read it because this is even, oh, that's pretty bad. Small type.
Yeah, small type, and then I blew it up.
Uh-huh.
It was a PDF file and I was able to manipulate it.
Mm-hmm.
And the subheadline here, Vast engineering works accomplished in an incredibly short time by our planetary neighbors, wonders of the September sky.
Well, you know, contemporaneously, I didn't think they were really saying it was vast. They only thought it was perhaps half-vast.
Well, half-vast certainly describes this story written by one Mary Proctor. I'm going to just read a little bit of this here, and we can judge it. But remember, this is the New York Times, and you might want to take that in consideration when you read the New York Times and say, if it's in the Times, it's so. And, you know, it might still be so. Maybe they are building canals up there, but somehow I don't think that's really what it's all about.
Well, because they're having a difficult time finding liquid water.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they have found liquid water, I believe.
Well, that was solid water.
Oh, well, yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. Technicalities.
Yeah,
okay.
Well.
Yeah. All right, according to a telegram dated August 17th from Flagstaff Observatory, Arizona, Dr. Percival Lowell, and this guy has a history, too.
Percival, what a great name.
It is a great name. This is probably why he has a history. He announces the rediscovery of two new canals of Mars, which were seen for the first time at the last opposition in 1909. The canals are now very conspicuous and attracting worldwide attention because of their startling significance.
Okay, now let me debunk this for a moment here,
yes,
if I can.
Debunk.
This article printed in New York Times in 19, what was it?
1911.
1911,
yeah.
Oh, that's my phone ringing.
Is that your phone?
Yeah.
You want to get that?
Yeah, I'll get it.
All right, I thought it was my phone.
Okay.
All right.
Excuse me.
Yeah, excuse us, folks. Mike's going to answer the phone. I'll continue reading the story, then he can debunk when you come back. Oh, you have one of those phones.
It's got to be a wrong number. I'm going to let it go to voicemail.
It's vibrating and ringing at the same time.
It's doing it, yeah.
Wow.
I don't recognize the... you like the ring, though.
I like the ring. The ring's good.
It's very retro kind of sounding.
Have you heard my ring?
No, I haven't.
Hang on. Yeah, I'm going to play you my ring here.
Ooh, that's a nice
Is this
phone.
A nice phone? This is my new... I switched this from Sprint PCS to Verizon. Kept the same phone number.
Ah.
Let's see.
But you had to get a new phone.
I had to get a new phone, yeah. Well, I had to get a new phone anyway. Because
you had to.
My other phone was just awful.
Mm-hmm.
It really was awful. Let's see. All right, that's not a very good one. How about this one?
No,
don't interrupt it. It's a great song.
I'm Teresa Zapolska.
Oh, you want polka? You want polka? I'll get you polka.
Go.
Yes, there's polka right here. Yeah. So you can You can listen to music like this every Sunday on WUSB. Okay.
Yep, yep.
Anyway, so...
What's with all the blinking lights?
It's a disco phone.
Whoa, this is nice.
Oh, again, people can't appreciate our phones over the radio.
Verizon?
It's not the way they look.
Verizon is who you went
Verizon
with?
Verizon Wireless, yes.
Oh, my word.
Okay, I'm getting a new
now
GSM phone.
How mighty have fallen.
New GSM phone next week, which I'll talk about.
Another new one.
So did you want to debunk something? I want to continue.
Well, yes, I did, because now it mentioned that it saw a certain number of canals in 1909.
Mm-hmm.
And this was written in 1911. They said they saw more canals. Obviously, it's an improvement in the optics.
It is. It is. And they're doing more for their infrastructure over there than we are over here, apparently. Dr. Lowell, by the way, just to debunk myself a little bit, Dr. Lowell was an astronomer who was very into the whole canal thing and believed that there was life on Mars and all that kind of thing. The popular notion. Yeah, here we go. The popular notion that Martian canals have been constructed by a heroic, intelligent race tapping melting polar ice for water to irrigate equatorial crops was argued persuasively by the famous astronomer Percival Lowell in his 1895 book. Not everyone agreed with the canal theory, but the idea of Mars supporting life became established and persists today. Now, here's something else involving canals, and this is kind of funny, actually. This is an example of confusion about Mars. It was found on about the famous canals. They reportedly were first observed by Italian priest Pietro Secchi in 1876. Pietro Secchi, I think Joel Block talked about him.
Mm-hmm.
Then Giovanni Schiaparelli published a map of Mars in 1877, 1 year later.
Really, did it show all the rest areas?
No, it did not. He assigned names to bright and dark features, which included a large number of straight-line features that Schiaparelli and Secchi called...
Cannoli!
Canali.
Okay.
The mistranslation in English-speaking countries of canali into canal instead of the correct channel brought a misleading connotation of artificial construction by Martians that had not been intended by them.
Aha! Uh-huh.
So that's kind of how this all got started.
Uh-huh.
Let's continue with the story, though. We can maybe debunk a little bit more. Measurement of their dimensions shows each of them to be 1,000 miles long and some 20 miles wide. In comparison, the canyon of the Colorado River would be a secondary affair. What has been the cause of these vast chasms, which have suddenly opened on Mars, where the internal forces are far less than could possibly be the case with our planet. Nothing like it has ever been seen or heard of before. To witness the coming into existence on another world of a surface feature in what we know to be no airy cloud-built fabric, but the solidest of ground, is in its character an event so far of unique occurrence.
Well,
what a sentence!
Go figure.
What an amazing... I want to read that sentence again.
Well, count how many words.
You can count the words. I want to read the sentence.
Okay.
Don't count that loud.
Okay.
To witness the coming into existence...
I can't keep up with you. I can't count that fast.
I'll catch it on the repeat.
Okay.
To witness the coming into existence on another world of a surface feature in what we know to be no airy cloud-built fabric, but the solidest of ground, is in its character an event so far of unique occurrence. I'll tell you, man. People just don't talk like that anymore.
No, they don't. And the world is a much sadder place because of it.
Isn't it, though?
Oh. Boy, I miss the beautiful Victorian prose.
That these vast chasms have been caused by some internal disturbance is out of the question, for shattering of the sort would certainly have left its mark in yawning, cavernous abysses.
Yeah, and you would be yawning if you kept reading this, that's for sure.
Such as we see on our own planet in regions where volcanic disturbances have taken place.
Now, this story was written by whom?
Mary Proctor.
Wasn't she Lincoln's speechwriter?
You know, I'll have to look that up. I don't know.
It sounds like it.
It could be. Sounds sort of like his way of speaking. In the case of the new canals recently observed on Mars, such widespread shattering effects are altogether absent, and as Dr. Lowell expresses it, the outcome is purely local and of most orderly self-restraint at that. An enormous change in the planet's features has taken place with no concomitant disruption between the bounds it set. The whole thing is wonderfully clear-cut.
Yeah, just like that sentence.
It's something. This was a big story in
August of 1911.
Mm-hmm. You can't find this on the web. You have to go to a library and look it up on microfilm or whatever service they might have. Martians built two immense canals in 2 years, dated August 27, 1911, New York Times.
Mm.
Unbelievable. I was going to open up to phone calls if anybody wants to call us 631-632-WUSB 9872. You still have the area codes memorized, Mike?
Some of them.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Any new ones of work that have come out lately?
No, it's hard to keep track of.
Where's 810? I was wondering that today.
That's Michigan.
Okay.
That's
see,
right around, that's outside of Detroit.
That's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I had a story written about me in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
And you were interviewed on Off the Hook as a result of that story. I heard that show not too long ago.
Was that the chronology? Go figure.
I think so. Mm-hmm. In fact, if we go to the web right now, which we can do from this radio station,
wow,
live even as we speak. See, I'm typing. I'm going to go to 2600.com. All right?
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go into our search. So funny how we have one microphone here now. Going to go into our little search bar here, and I'm going to type your last name, Yuhas, Y-U-H-A-S.
Yeah.
And as it searches through 2600, it will find your name.
No less than... It's a Google page.
Oh, there you are in Brain Damage of 1990. That's not the right one. We went Off the Hook June 1996, I believe.
I was listening to a few of these... not long ago.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful service you have here.
It brings back memories. Mm-hmm. It really does. And it's great to be able to put
Do you have the July 11th?
I haven't gotten to the Voice of Long Island yet. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. I got lots of those tapes in my basement, you know.
Make sure they stay safe.
Okay. Make sure we don't have a water main leak in my basement.
Yeah, please. It's very important that we maintain some history here. Let's see. Let me move the microphone over here. There we go. Mike Yuhas, where is he? Mike Yuhas. Okay. I got to search for your name here because it's kind of... All right. Y-U-H-A-S. Such a great sound. Calling Mike Yuhas in Milwaukee. Right?
Yeah.
Which is where you would be. Well, describe you as a man who has all the area codes memorized. I don't know why it doesn't describe you that way here. Anyway, okay, let's take a phone call. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good, how are you?
Not bad. Calling in from Iowa, trying to give you a Hawkeye perspective on the caucus.
Okay, did you go to the caucus yourself, sir?
Yes, I did.
What's it like?
Well, for one thing... The national media misses 50% of it. All they talk about is the vote for the candidate. The other part of the caucus is the developing a platform, which you guys don't get to do because you just vote in a primary.
Yep.
So that's one advantage to a caucus.
Uh-huh. But, seriously, sir, if you supported Al Sharpton, do you really think you would have been, you know, taken seriously? Do you think that vote would have counted in any way? You would have been shouted down, wouldn't you?
I think people would have listened.
Uh-huh.
That's the difference
between
there and here.
But you need to get 15% for anything to be taken seriously, right?
True. But, see, Iowa and New Hampshire are not electing a candidate. They're just weeding the field.
Yeah, but in a sense, you know, everyone is listening to what happens in Iowa, and now as a result, people drop out, other people change their vote. So people look at Iowa as kind of like setting the tone.
Sure, it worked better before when you had a month after the New Hampshire primary, before the next primary, because that would give the second and third place candidates a chance to, dig into that momentum. But the idea is to just, you know, if Dick Gephardt couldn't win in Iowa, he can't win anywhere. This was his backyard.
I suppose. Yeah, I guess.
He won here in 88. You know, and couldn't win here now, so...
But you never know what's going to happen. I mean, everybody could go psychotic like Dean, you know, and Gephardt could have come from behind. Anything's possible. I just think it's a little premature to give up based on such a small group of people.
There's still... He's still got a shot. If there's a three-way tie, he could be the alternate pick.
That would be interesting. He could also be a vice presidential pick as well. Listen, sir, we're out of time. I want to thank you for your call.
All right, thanks.
All right,
good night.
Keep listening. Good night. And that's our call from Iowa. Mike, we're out of time. It goes so fast, doesn't it?
Oh.
I wish I'd known you were here. I would have baked a cake or something.
Well, that would have been fun.
That would have been fun. It would have been a disaster, too. So it's great. You're here, and it's going to be a blizzard, and you'll be stuck here.
And we go home tomorrow.
Don't count on it.
Theoretically.
Don't count on it. By what? By what means of transportation?
Air.
Late
in the day.
You're not going anywhere. Mike Yuhas is going to be here for a while. You're going to be doing some fill-ins on this radio station, I would imagine. Well, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week. No Off the Hook tomorrow. We'll be back here next week before another show is on the air. I want to close, since we were talking about Mars a little bit. You know, there's that perfect song. I don't know if you remember this, that came out, Paul McCartney and Wings. Venus and Mars is All Right Tonight. It's just, it really fits the mood so perfectly, like a glove. I don't have that song with me. Well, I just want to, you know, lay it out here. You know, I'm being honest. But I do have another version of it, all right? This is the Langley School. Have you heard of them? They have a great chorus. And for some reason, they have a CD out. And this is their rendition of the Paul McCartney and Wings song, Venus and Mars. And they also sing into Rock Show, just like, you know, they did on that album as well. And we're going to close out with that. Please look to the skies and look to Mars and look at the pictures on NASA.gov. And stay tuned for the blues coming up next. See you next week.